This is Wednesday, May the 1st, 2002. It's George Jackson speaking. This afternoon, I'm going to be interviewing Irene Turner. And we're looking at the history of Joseph Brown, the King, that was written by Ken Brown.
Yes. Might be an odd thing in it that I haven't got in outside of that first part.
Where does Ken live?
Ken lives in Markham at the moment. Yes, he was in Toronto for years. Mm-hmm. He's worked in Toronto. He was in Scarborough. Lived in Scarborough.
Right. Now, I noticed in here that your grandmother was an Evans, was it?
Or
your
mother? My mother was an Evans.
Your mother was an Evans. Okay. Yeah. And did they? Well then, okay. And what family would? Are there other members of that family who are still there with us?
No. Well, there isn't any of them living. Do you know where Edgar Evans lived? Or is it too far back?
Too far back for me, yeah.
Yes. Well, you know where the Brown farm was?
Mm-hmm.
That was an Evans farm related in the first place. And one son, Zachariah, when he married, moved Kitty Corner across the road. And when they was ready to get married, Joseph Brown had bought the Evans place, and it was the west half of lot 14, and he bought the east half of lot 14 for Day, so Mother lived across the road, actually, her kitty corner to Day when they got married, and then moved across the road.
I see. Right. Well, what do you have prepared there?
Well, I have six pages here.
Okay.
Would you like me to read it?
All right. Okay.
Every time I look at it, I change something.
That's what you call editing.
I had help with it on Sunday to get it typed so I can be able to read it.
Right.
So. I'll read it. It takes 15 minutes, I think.
Okay, that's fine.
To read it. This is M. Irene Turner's take. Joseph Brown, who lived on the farm west half of lot 14, concession 10 in West Glenbury Township, bought the east half of lot 14 for his son Walter to live on. It was previously owned by a retiring farmer, Mr. Manning. Walter married Mary Evans on March 3, 1909. I am their daughter, Irene Turner. Margaret Irene, I should say. My father was very fond of fruit, so one of the first things he did was plant an orchard. It was on a slope facing south, halfway back on the String Hundred farm. The orchard consisted of a variety of plum trees, a couple of cherry trees, early and late pears, a variety of apple trees, and two crab trees. One was a little one for jelly and pickling, and a larger one was very sweet and juicy for preserving. The apple trees were yellow transparents, St. Lawrence, Snows, Tallman's Sweets, and Northern Spies. A groundhog decided to make his burrow under one rhubarb root. The root provided all the rhubarb we needed. When dwarf trees came on the market, a new orchard was planted. Near the fifth farm buildings located from the front lane, by the front lane. This orchard included new varieties of the same fruits, as well as a raspberry patch. My parents installed a telephone in 1914 and also put the L on the barn in that summer. In 1916, a well was dug in the Blue Clay. The Blue Clay was so hard it had to be chipped out with an axe in the stable in front of the cow's manger. In 1918, they bought their first car, a Model T Ford from Dennis Nolan. All instructions they got was while he drove a short distance on the 10th concession and back. I don't know when the grinder was installed, but it ended the time-consuming trips to the Luke's mill in town for chop food for the cows and pigs. The Z engine powered the grinder. Wood cutting bees were held in the spring, and four neighbors came to help. One of them owned the saw. The Z engine was the power for it. The trees were cut in the bush in the winter and piled in the yard until spring. The threshing was another neighborly job involving six local farmers. The threshing machine went around the farms after the wheat harvest and again to thresh the barley and oats. Clover threshing was done late in the fall or early winter. In the fall, the farmers came with team and wagon and shovel to get gravel from Clarence Woods' gravel pit. His farm was on the east of our farm. They used our lanes as shortcuts to take gravel to the 10th concession, the road in front of our farms. In the summer, we had a beef ring where 20 or so families contributed a steer each week. Everyone picked up their share of meat on Wednesday morning. When the beef ring was no longer feasible, Jim Webb, a butcher from town, made a tour of the surrounding country to deliver meat to the farm families. The baker also toured the country, so we no longer had to bake bread. The mail was picked up at the post office in town until 1912, when a rural mail delivery was started. It was delivered to a mailbox at each gate. Then the daily papers and magazines became available to the farmers. We subscribed to the Toronto Globe, Montreal Herald and Weekly Star, the Ontario Farmer, the Countryman. We loved the Countryman because it was had something for everyone and it had cereals. Two authors we liked the best were Ralph Connor and Emily Loring. Both parents loved to read aloud. When the Countryman came, these cereals were read aloud in the evening, along with a little story, Song of the Lazy Farmer. We children loved to color the pictures on the children's page. When Daddy was a young lad at home, a Mr. Stopper walked the roads bringing music lessons to practically every farm home. The Brown family took advantage of his services. Walter and his sisters learned to play the organ. One brother, Frank, learned the violin, and Harry a mandolin, but neither kept it up later in life. At one time, my father played the organ at Colson's Hill Presbyterian Church. His younger sister, Jessie, played the Ebenezer Methodist Church organ. And another sister, Mary, played at church in Ravenshoe, where she taught public school. Two tiring jobs that needed to be done in the summer. One job was picking mustard weed from the grain crops when it was in bloom, a bright yellow flower. We walked the fields in a row from one end to the other, pulling all the weeds by the roots and carrying them away from the fields. I remember the day Daddy came in and told us he picked only 15 plants. Mustard seed was very hard to clean out of the grain, and it spoiled the price if too many showed up in a bushel of grain. The other was picking stones from the fallow fields. A horse and stone boat was used to carry the bigger stones. Sometimes a team and wagon were used when we collected the smaller stones. Eventually the mustard disappeared and the stones are piled into fence rows or into the wasteland of the mountain. Small stones were very hard on the knives of the mower and the binder. My father was interested in trees of all kinds. He planted a lot of trees on the farm over the years. The bush was fenced so that the cows couldn't get into it. It was made into a demonstration woodlot in the 1930s. There were over 100 species of trees in it. According to a high school teacher from town, he spent a lot of time there. A windbreak was planted west of the driveway, which eventually sheltered the hen house, as eggs were an income for our farm. We kept mostly leghorn hens and some low-down reds, which produced over 100 dozen eggs a week. We sold them at the co-op in Barrie and also on the main route in town. The water from the house was piped into the cellar, then force pumped into a tank in the kitchen for drinking and cooking. There was also a cistern in the cellar. A pump in the kitchen from it gave us soft water for washing. When we had too many milking cows to milk by hand, a D. Lavelle milking machine was installed using the Z engine for power. In 1948, when we were connected to the hydro line, that was on the 10th concession, the milker was converted to hydro power. Mr. George Deegan, a local electrician, showed Clarence how to string the hydro wire. Working together, they installed necessary wires and outlets to the house and barn to bring us hydro power. It surely made things easier for us because we sold sweet cream to the creamery in town for table use. In 1947, Ansel Brick replaced the original sheets of tin that covered the house. This made our house a lot warmer. In 1934 was our coldest winter. I remember going to the veranda one morning and it actually felt warm. It was only minus 12 Fahrenheit after a spell of temperature between minus 30 and 40 Fahrenheit. Ernest, my brother, in his first year of high school, walked to town to school. There were snow drifts everywhere. He was the only country pupil to make it to school that day. He went to his granddad Brown after school to spend the night, and then he walked home the next day after school. He wore a Melton cloth overcoat and a cap with earlugs, which he pulled down. In 1936, we had the hottest spell, I remember. In the first 2 weeks of July, the sun rose a red ball and set in the evening the same red ball. The farmers worked in the early hours of the day and late afternoon. They spent late morning and early afternoon indoors or in the shade. It was too hot to work the horses as well as the farmer. In May 1921, there was a flood across Simcoe County, especially on Scanlon Creek, where a cloud burst took the bridge out. On Concession 10 at Tom Stewart's farm, a culvert on the 10th line at Highway 11, and the bridge on Highway 11, so we became a little island. There wasn't a drop of rain in town 3 miles away. I remember watching from an upstairs window the cedar trees on their own little mound of earth sailing upright down the flooded creek. 1921 was also the year Highway 11 was paved in our area. It was in 1963 when the tops of three hills were lowered. At Mount Pleasant, it meant new entrances to the cemetery. The hill at Colson's Hill school site was also lowered. The intersection of Concession 11 with the highway necessitated a different entrance to the west. Before we had a tractor, an old Ford car was used to pull the powered implements. Next came a Dodge car that was made into a utility vehicle doing farm work, as well as taking logs to the sawmill for lumber and power and buck rake, which Clarence had designed and made. Next in line was a second-hand Fordson tractor before we got a new Ford tractor. Ken Wood restored the old Fordson, and it was used to draw the line slope in the year's parade. The Willie Gardner family were beekeepers, and one of their many yards was in our bush. It provided us with 60 pounds of honey every year as rent. We also grew buckwheat in the field nearest the hives, so some of the honey was buckwheat flavored. I liked it better than the real sweet clover honey. Clarence sold the farm in 1976 and came to live with me. Six children were in our family. Ruth, the eldest, died at 16 with pneumonia. Joseph, the next, died at birth. Grace became a teacher before marrying Herb Black of Stroud, who was a farmer. They raised three daughters. I was next in line. I left school after 4 years of high school to work at home, as mother was poorly. She died in 1944. Of complications from diabetes, and after having a leg removed. I married Victor Turner in 1963. Clarence had 2 years of high school before he left it to work on the farm. He never married. Ernest became a radio operator and sailed in two ships that were sunk during the 1939-45 war. He also worked in different stations across Canada before going to work in Ottawa, Department of Transport, where he later retired. He married Pearl Evans, and they had one daughter and two sons. Day died after 3 weeks in hospital in 1973 at the age of 89. During his lifetime, he was always interested in new things in nature and had a lively interest in stars, as were his son Ernest and grandson Eric, being amateur astronomers. Clarence had a singing voice. When the Reverend Jacksons were at Vaughan Head United Church, Mrs. Jackson formed a choir from the surrounding area. Clarence, as a member of this choir, gained a lot of knowledge from her on how to use his voice. He became a soloist in Bradford United Church. After his sudden death in 1988, at the age of 70, we put a stained glass window in the narthex of Bradford United Church in honor of many memories we had of his singing with the choir and as a soloist.
Very good. I have some questions.
I'm sure you have.
What is the Z engine? We'll just go back. I'll just go back to the Z engine. What is that?
I was asked that today, but I can't tell you.
Was it one of the old hit and miss ones? You know.
Well, I think maybe it was. It was only for that long.
Two little skids.
Yes, and the back of it was rounded like this.
And there was a square thing like that with water in it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, right. And I think it started with a spark.
Yeah. It's the old hit and miss, what they call the hit and miss.
Or what, an induction or something?
Yeah. It goes along, as long as there's a load on it, it'll go put.
Yeah.
But then if you take the load off it, it'll go put, and it'll go bing. But there's a load on it, it fires.
Yes.
If there's no load, it doesn't fire.
Yes.
It's called the, that's what they call it, the hit and miss.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. What was the name of, you mentioned the thrasher came around. What were the names of some of the people who came around to thrash?
Donald Coots was the one I remember the best.
And where did he live?
He was from Newtown. I think they had a farm there.
Now, did if I...
Melbourne Belfry was one. And Mary Nisha's husband, Hughes, not Lloyd, Grenville Hughes. His brother, Grenville Hughes. They were at Guildford. He was one of the later ones.
Yes.
And Earl James was the one that had the clover threshing machine. He lived in town. He was a mechanic. I think he had a badge too, but I don't remember for sure.
Now, when you got the grinder, the grain grinder, you drove it with the Z engine as well.
Yes.
Yeah. It was one that they drove with it. See, you didn't get it. What year would get mixed? We're back here to tractors. So.
Well,
but what year? What year?
It would be in the teens, but I don't know just when.
Yeah, when they got the forts. When they got the forts.
We used horses till about 1940.
We were on the farm at Downsview. Like we had horses until until 40. Till in the 40s, yeah. We had a team of horses. We used to do the, we did the seeding, used to use them on the manure spreader. we cut the hay with them and rake the hay and send everything, a lot of those things.
Yes.
Okay.
But the Z engine was the only engine that we had. They could take, it was housed in the stable, but the day we cut wood, it was brought to the front yard where we had the pile of wood.
Now, when you went to the gravel pit, they shoveled it all by hand?
Yes.
They shoveled it on, and did they have, and this was gravel that was going out to go on the road?
Yes.
And so did they just have planks on the bottom of the wagon?
Planks on the bottom and one up the side.
One up the side, and then when they got there, they just tipped the planks?
No, they pulled them up at the side first, and then they moved the planks and drove along.
Was that that was like a community affair, like was there the community,
well, yes,
kind of a bee, another form of a bee?
Yes, that's why I have all the bees together.
Yeah. Okay, you mentioned the beef ring. Whereabouts was the slaughterhouse?
At Elwood Bateman's. You know where that is?
I don't know, but it'll all fit together when in time. Okay, but if you tell me.
Well, you know where our farm was.
Yes.
Clarkswood was to the highway.
Yes.
And Elwood Bateman's house is, right at the,
the
10th line, mm-hmm. It's swampish.
Right.
And their house is three quarters of the way up the hill.
Okay.
The white house, and that's where the Batemans lived.
Okay.
And that's where the slaughter house was.
So it's on the 10th as well. Okay, all right.
So that'll be lot 16.
Okay. All right, now. Who, he's on the other side of the highway.
Yes.
Okay. East. Okay. You mentioned the rural mail. Do you remember any of the names of any of the people who delivered the mailmen?
Well, the first mailman was the father of Harold Taylor and Herbert, and what was the other man? There was three boys. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't a well man, and he only had it for 2 years. But I couldn't tell you who took it next. But then we had an Alf Payne, and he drove it for umpteen years.
P-A-Y-N-E or P-A-I-N-E?
P-A-Y-N-E, I think. And we got our mail at 10 to 12 every morning.
And that would be our number two?
Our number two.
And that came out of Bradford?
Yes.
Okay. Now, there
the old post office was where, just west of where Kilkenny's big building was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a little wooden from there, and that's where the first post office was.
There was a post office at Deerhurst too, was there?
Yes.
So the RR2 didn't go up past there.
Yes, it did.
Oh.
But the ones on the 12th line east of the highway, for some reason or other, they put their mailboxes at the corner of the 12th and the highway. Mm-hmm. And it stayed that way till 1959, when Graham Matthews was our mailman. And they had put in a petition to have their mailboxes moved to their gate, and it was done. So that would be a big difference. So Seth and Nisha's were way down the track to have to all those years.
Did Graham Matthews come after Al Payne?
No. Jack Gibney.
Gibney?
Yes. G-I-B-N-E-Y.
And then? Matt?
I think that's it. I don't think there's anybody else in it. But after that, I couldn't tell you. Because I think I moved to town before. Well, he was still at it, and I couldn't tell you.
Well, those folks, I mean, did Payne, he used a horse and a buggy, did he? Or did he have a track car?
I know, he had a car.
He had a car.
I think somebody better than I am might question that.
Well, you see, we were on RR1. We were down on RR1, and our mail van was with Melbourne's.
Yes.
Mr. Melbourne.
Charlie Melbourne,
and I guess Bus Culbert was mixed up in that because he used to spell him off. And then we got a mail lady.
Did you?
Yeah. Ruth Melbourne took it over. Ruth took it over there. And this was about the time that we finished. She took it over most of the time.
Yes.
So we always used to kid that we had a mail lady.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now you mentioned that Frank, is that George and Stan's father?
Yes.
He played the violin.
When he was at home.
But
the boys never heard him play it.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, I just think because I always have a little affiliation with people who played the violin, because when I went to high school in Weston, we stayed with my grandmother. And my grandmother was very musical. And my uncle had played the violin.
Yes.
So she said, come on, I want you to play the violin. So I got introduced to the violin. I got sent down to take violin lessons. And so all the time I was at high school, I played the violin. Played it in the school orchestra and stuff like that.
Well, that's good.
And then like everybody else, once you're finished school, like, you know, you don't do it anymore. Like, you know.
Yeah.
So the only occasion was that one time at the Presbyterian Church down on the farm down there.
Yeah.
At the Christmas concert, I got together with our oldest lad and we played a duet. He played the trombone. He was in the school band and said that.
Yes.
He played the trombone and I played the violin.
Do you still play the violin once in a while?
No. We had a little guy was visiting us one day, and he got poking around in it. And he knocked out, you know, in the violin there's a little center post.
Oh, yes.
He knocked the center post out and stuff and rearranged the strings and everything and managed to put a little crack in it. So but I've never got it fixed. I should. It's a valuable violin, actually.
Sure.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. I was interested in your comments about picking mustard. We've all been there. But
Were you involved in picking mustard?
We did some, yes. Well, we also did thistles too.
Did you?
Yeah.
We didn't do the thistles. But there got to be plenty of them.
Yeah. We had an experience.
That's the sow thistle.
We had an experience when we came to Bradford because we had never seen mustard.
Yes.
There was the odd head, but nothing. And the fields were just full of it.
Yes.
And
they were yellow.
Yellow. And oh,
holy smokes, we'd never seen anything like this. So anyway, after it was up, it was up, the stuff was like this, we sprayed it. Well, then the lad we had doing it, he'd get out and sometimes he didn't overlap, so you get these little strips of mustard up the field.
Yes.
So, but our first crop when we came to Bradford,
yes.
It was, I'm sure there was quite a bit of gossip around the community about the way that we farmed. But anyway, we survived.
Well, it would show.
That's right.
You know, the fields were quite covered with, and. Well, I guess Dave picked the mustard before, but anyway, when we got big enough to do it, why, we strung out across the field.
Sure.
And I don't know whether it was just Grace and I and Dave, because, or maybe Clarence was old enough, I don't know.
Well, you know, that's one thing about the farm. You learn how to do, you learn how to work.
Yes.
You were given a job and you just went ahead and did it. You
know? Sure.
You didn't question whether you should or not. You were just told that that's what we're going to do and as long as it's going to be done. You mentioned there was a bush on the farm and that it was fenced. Is the bush still there?
Yes, it's at the on the 11th line. You know where the 200, Woods is 200 acres. They had 200 acres. And ours is next. Ours is a string 100. But Uncle Harry's bush was right beside it. So there's across the 200 acres is a bush at the 11th line.
On the south side of the 11th.
Yes, on the south side of the 11th. And Glenn Travis has a house in there now. Right at the east side, the gravel pit still shows in Woods' there, right at the corner of their farm, and of course some of the gravel pit was in our face too. But our gravel wasn't nearly as good as what was in Woods', so they got for the roads out of Woods'. But it's above where the gravel pit was, where the Travises have their house.
Would that bush, they wouldn't have taken logs out of it?
We took a lot of logs out of it. They did a lot of logging out of it over the years.
I'm trying to see if I can find what you might almost call as an original bush lot. I guess there aren't any in this part of the world. But something that would resemble it, so that this is what it looked like when these first people came to this part of the world.
Well, I think ours would be the nearest, because as a school teacher said, he had over 100 species of trees. But I don't. There was a sign up driveway into it was about halfway long, but it's not showing now. And there was a sign on one of the trees, quite a piece up. It might still be there, I don't know, put on in the 1930s or early 40s when it was made. A demonstration woodlot.
My dad's brother was with the Ministry of Natural Resources, what was the Ministry of Natural Resources at that. He was one of the main promoters of this demonstration woodland program.
Yes.
So, okay, good. My hearing isn't as great as it should be.
Well, leave it off for a minute.
Okay. The May 21 storm, were there, we have a little bit of a write-up on that. Were there any evidences that were there any mills on the Brown farms?
No, all the mills were gone by that time. There were seven, I think, at one time on that section of Scanlon Creek, mm-hmm. but one was a grist mill and the rest were all lumber.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. And was the grist mill the one that was down in what is now Scanlon Park?
Yes, the stones are in, the stones are put at the gate. They're in that picture.
Yeah, they're in this picture here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And they put a spirea in each one.
Were there, do you ever remember seeing any of the remains of the mills when they're further
no.
up the creek? Nothing like that. No. I know we've all heard about the fact that there were, you know, six or seven mills, but
yes.
it doesn't. Somebody was mentioning that they have a map that shows the location of them, but
I see.
Still, but it's the thing is that the creek is not nearly not nearly the volume of water comes down now that used to come down.
No, but the couple of days after the flood, the creek was only this wide, the same as it was before.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And you see that same, you're likely aware that was the same same storm that went down through the North Branch and
yes.
took out the bridges down on the Five Side Road. Down between the fifth and the fourth.
Yes.
And it interestingly enough, it took out the had an effect on Stanley or George's farm because it was
yes.
along the west side of it. So,
yeah.
Okay. The old you mentioned that before you had the Fortune tractor, you had an old Ford car, a tractor
yes.
that was made out of
no,
a Ford.
An old Ford car, just.
Just a fork.
Just put a pull on it.
Just put a drawbar at the back of it.
Yes.
I see. And what all things could they do, what they do with it, like?
Everything that the horses did.
Is that right? Would they plow with it? No, not really. No.
Well, I guess they'd have to because they didn't have the horses to do it.
Now, with the Dodge one, did they make it into like a tractor type thing?
Well, the top of it was cut in the center,
mm-hmm.
and it sat out like that, and the rest of it, you saw the housing at the back
mm-hmm.
of it, and the drawbar that he put on it, and it did it everything, and he hauled logs that were real long, that were right at his head.
Mm-hmm.
And went right to the length of the wagon besides.
I see. They didn't have tractor wheels on the back of it. Right?
No.
Because see, you've seen those, though, haven't you? With the ones that they made, they took a car like that, and then they cut the back wheels off it,
no.
and then they put they came out of they were put together by Otaco up in Orillia.
Yes.
And then they put wheels on them. There were quite a few of them on the marsh, and they had a wheel like this on the back, about this wide.
It's just
I just wanted to go ahead.
Just some car size.
Okay. Not very interesting. Okay. Well, that'll add a little bit to some of your of that tea. That's very well done. Very very
well,
interesting.
I hope well, my voice sounded not too bad.
Okay. All right. Now, can we go back from there? Can we go back down to your experiences down on the lot south half of lot 14 with Vic? You went from what year was it? Mentioned here.
I'll have to do that another day because he lived with the, when he came to Canada first, Mr. Fulford was in Toronto to meet the boys that were coming. And he came up to Bradford, or where to live on the 12th line, up to the farm. And the first job he had to do was help Mrs. Fulford paper. But he lived with them in the summertime, like in farm year. And I spent the winters in Toronto. And most of it was at Quaker Oats, I think, an oatmeal of some kind. Mm-hmm. But to get a full report, I would have to, if we have time for another day.
Yeah, sure. Yep. I have a picture here. Take a look at. Do you have a magnifying glass handy?
Yes, I do.
You do. You're like the okay. All right. Now.
Oh, you got it upside down.
Yeah.
This is here. Here's Bradford. Come down Simcoe Road.
Yeah.
And here's the six line.
Yeah.
Here. And this would be your home here. Right here. That would be where you live. Okay.
I never lived. I lived in town on Broad Street.
Oh, okay.
But,
this was the Turner home here, wasn't it?
It would have been. This is a sixth lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is Wilbur Neshaw's.
That's right.
And this is Tom Brown's.
No, that was Adam and Chuck's.
Well, this is Adam and Chuck.
Well, Tom Brown's over here. Up here.
Yeah, it'll be right next. Well, Adam and Chuck's is just 50 acres, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But who are the other 50?
Just a minute now. We'll just shut this off.
Going up the base.
What Irene and I are chatting about here is at one time there was a road allowance of down the west side of the north half of lot 14, which led down, gave back, it was used as the lane, the farm lane, to get to the Turner home, which was in the south half of that lot. And it was was it fenced off, or did it just, was it just
a lane? It was fenced one time. And there was a low part in the lane there, and we got stuck in it one day, I guess it was springtime. But we come up to just onto the Turner property and turned east, and that's where the house was, right there. Well, then when they had to build the new lane, they just went straight along the edge of the farm out to this road here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Well, where was the, is there's a in that picture. Now this picture here is 1946, and there's a farmstead here. Is that the home? Is that the home? The Turner home there?
To me, it was just south of the
lot line.
The lot line. House and barns.
Well, it showed. Let's see. Okay. All right.
The children, when they walked to school, they walked west from the house through that lane, and of course, Doan's farm started there too, so they went across Doan's farm to the house. And then out to the road.
Oh, okay. And then up to the number four school?
Over to the number four school. Maybe they went that way all the time because to go way out here around to the canal bank to get to school.
Kids always find the short route, don't they?
Well, I would imagine so.
We have a little bit of a problem with that. In town, because where we
I would imagine it was always there, like a road allowance came straight down.
Well, apparently,
you know, like, well, apparently the road allowance, there's a mention there of the archer here needing the road allowance for this part here.
Yes.
But there's no mention of this part down here, and I just wondered whether there, and apparently somebody said there was, well, I understand, it wasn't until some time later on, like maybe the 30s or something, that this road was actually put through.
I would think it would be in the 30s, because one of the ideas that Vic had was to fix.
On the farm down, you say you never lived, did you
no,
live
I,
down? You never
you
lived
see, down? They sold the farm in
49. Yeah.
And that's when they built the house in town.
Oh, okay.
And see, I didn't marry Vic till 1963.
Okay. So. Oh. I was just wondering if you had any memories, you don't have too many memories of getting involved with the early days of the marsh or anything like that. Have you been down there at all?
No, we used to go and visit them, and of course all the milk that they didn't drink themselves went to the people on the marsh. They had people living in the lane that went straight south of the barn buildings. And I guess the eggs and milk went there. If it was more than enough for that, I guess it got to other people. But I know Aunt Lizzie used to have a lot of maybe 20 or between 20 or 30 milk bottles lined up.
What, which school did you go to when up in the 10th?
We went to number 9.
How many would be in your classes, roughly speaking, when you were
going
to school?
Well, there would be between 20 and 30, depending on the year.
Remember any teachers' names?
Well, my first teacher was Aunt Ella Adair.
Your aunt? Aunt?
Aunt? Aunt. My daddy's sister. And Vivian Bowles, one of George Bowles' daughters, lived on the 9th line. She taught their year.
Did she marry?
No, that was Vivian Bowles. Well, then I had a relation of the Woods's, Hilda May, there for 2 years. And Irma Broderick was the one that put me through the entrance.
Say Hilda Mather, M-A-T-H-E-R?
Yes.
Did you go to high school?
4 years.
Were you, say what, you were there to the old high school?
The one that's on Queen Street.
Yeah. The one that's there now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It had been rebuilt, thank you. You were
well, it was
fairly new when you were
before. It was new when I went there. It went up a few years, but it was a new one.
And how did you get to high school?
The Hartman boys, they drove a baby grand. was a, what they called an overland baby grand. And that was for 2 years, I think, and then my sister Grace drove the Ford car that we had at that time.
What subjects would you take in high school at most? I have to remember the subjects, all the subjects you took in high school.
There was algebra. I took geometry in second form. But of course, there was English and British and history.
Did you take French?
Yes, they're French.
Latin?
Yes.
makes you kind of wonder when you hear what the kids take today, doesn't it? When you think of the languages, because you took two Englishes, didn't you? You took English literature and English composition.
Yes.
And French grammar and French composition.
Yes.
And you took two Latin. And I know I was going to go through, I thought I might go into engineering, so I took German.
Oh, yes.
You do these things.
Well, they just had French and Latin. Yeah. And Latin.
Were there any, associated with school, plays or extracurricular things like that that you were involved?
No.
So it was just to get to school in the morning and get home?
Well, when we went to school, it was school all the time. Nowadays, the children go on trips here, there, the other way.
Your family went to church at
Ebenezer.
Ebenezer.
Well, in the first few years, up until we got the car, they went to the Presbyterian Church, and that's where Daddy played the organ.
At Colson's Hill.
Well, when the United Church was formed in 1926, Granddad thought it was time that Daddy went.
Reverted back to the Methodist roots.
So we went to Ebenezer then until the church was closed in 1953. But before that, Clarence was singing in Bradford Choir for a number of years. We had roots there.
I was scanning through Tom Pratt's articles.
Oh, yes.
And I ran across a story he wrote about W.G. Ferris.
Oh, yes.
And his activities with the Methodist Church Choir and
yes.
some of the musicals they used to put on.
Yes.
And this is Murray's father.
Yes.
And he was part of that. Was Clarence part of that? The group that would be involved.
Well, there was a quartet of them.
Hi.
George Green. But I can't remember who the other two were. But there was four of them that really could sing. Well, I guess they weren't the whole evening, but they were quite busy at it.
And did you, in your church, there was an organization called the Epworth League. That was before my time.
Before your time. That was when Dad and Mother were teenagers.
I see. Okay. Were you ever involved with junior farmers?
No.
That was after your time.
Okay. No, it was in my time, but I wasn't involved.
4-H, no?
No.
Okay.
I was in the Dooner Institute, but... Not the other
One of the big changes to West Gwillimbury was Highway 400.
Yes.
What was West Gwillimbury like before Highway 400 came along? How did it change?
When I was raised, my boundaries were the school section. I didn't know beans about anything outside. I knew Hartman's were the other side. Well, Stewart's were 8 school. But on the 9th line, I didn't know anything past Stanley Stewart's and the Bowles is on the other side of the road. And of course, the Lees farm. And we were the north side of it, you see. Anything Bessie Wood went to our school, but from the 11th line, we went to number 12. But being in horse and buggy days, we didn't, we weren't out very much. We could have been, I guess, but we weren't because of that time of the Fennel's ball team, quite a good ball team, and I don't know if they were in the league, but they were bigger. It's clock work in the summertime.
You knew when the ball game was, and there was always a big crowd.
There seemed to be.
Do you remember when you got your first radio?
We had crystal set first in the 1930s. And I don't know whether you remember when Red Horner and King Clancy were in Pushmarky.
And Busher Jackson.
And
Charlie Conacher.
1 year they were in the playoffs and Uncle Harry's had a radio, so we walked up to their house every time there was a playoff game to listen to the radio because we just had the crystal set.
Is there? Well.
But when they first had the radio in 1940, there was a license that they had to have.
Supposed to have anyway.
That must have been.
Did, now you mentioned, just to go back to, say you originally you knew the school section. I guess the car was the thing that changed that as much as anything.
Yes.
The car. But then did you go to, you were used to go to Highway 11, which was the main route?
Well, we walked it.
You walked Highway 11?
We walked it on. Over for the 9th line to the Lumberdine School.
And
the year that it was paved, it was awful because the tar stuck to your shoes.
Yeah, isn't that something?
Yeah.
And do you remember, was that about the same time that they changed the, do you ever remember Highway 11? When it was on the other side of the railway tracks going to Newmarket?
No.
See, that one time...
It was a toll road down there.
Yeah, and it was around in the 1920s that it was changed from the north side of the tracks to the south side of the track.
Yes. The toll road stopped at the river.
Yes. Yeah. But I just wondered if you'd ever remember when it was on the north side.
The land was swamp up our way, and it was bush on the 9th line, so I can't see where there would be a road allowance for it out there when it came past the river that came up Holland Street. Up to the Four Corners and then turn north.
Yeah. But on the other side of the river, by the river view?
Yes.
That all when you were going to Newmarket, that was always on.
Always on this side.
Always on this side. Okay.
But we have driven the toll road just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Because Mrs. Taylor, the one I mentioned, of the mailman's wife, she was a school teacher. Of course, he died when the kids were small. And she taught school in Amsterdam. What's it called, Amsterdam? But I don't know which one it was, but it's on the other side of the toll road somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a, there's a schoolhouse. There's still a, it's a home.
It still
now.
Shows, yes.
Yeah, almost out to Bathurst Street there on the north side of the, on the side of the, side of the, side
yeah.
of the road. That's like the one. Okay. You, did you ever, you didn't have, in other words, then, when you were on, living on this side of the town, like on Highway 11, you had, didn't have very much to do with the people over at Newtown and like and that?
No, no, that was way out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, I know what you mean. Okay. Well, all right, fine. Well, that's very interesting.
Did anybody ever tell you about the day that the airplane came down in Merle Maccabees?
No.
I got somebody to say to that. Maccabee Farm. The site of Burr Rose, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
It must have been in the, just after the war, early in the 20s. We had to go and see it.
Did it land safely or did it crash?
Oh, yeah.
It was quite interesting to see.
But I couldn't tell you who brought it there or anything. Maybe it was done on purpose, I don't know.
Somebody that we who's related to the Maccabees that we've come to know is Doris Williams. Her name was Anderson.
Oh.
And she was and her mother, they lived at the right at the north end of Bradford on the west side of Barry Street, just south of Fletcher.
Yes.
And her father came up, and he came up to be to manage the baby carriage factory and stuff in Bradford.
Oh.
And married her, and her mother's name is starts with a Z. So it's not Zelma. And it runs through them. But then she ties back into the McAfees.
Yes.
And she's there. They live down in the park. They live down in Willowdale now.
Yes.
But they also are down in the park where we are, where we spent the winter.
Yes.
So she's given me the history. There's the McAfees and there's the Holtz. And family by the name of Holt, and this Anderson. Her maiden name is Anderson, and they're also related to the Garretts in some way.
Oh,
you know how that works. So this.
Well, the only name I familiar with is the McPhees, but they're long gone too.
Yeah. Did you ever hear of anybody by the name of Macbeth?
No.
Macbeth, M-B-E-A-T-H. And there's a name of in the property in one of these properties down there where the Turners lived down there.
Oh yes.
People by the name of Rogers. Did you ever hear anything of them?
Well, I think that the Rogers owned a real parcel of land. I think that if we went back through what the Evanses had on the south side of 10 in Session, it was Rogers Farm as well. I don't know whether there were Ben Rogers that lived on the 8th line or any relation or not, but was it Zenas Rogers? Or Zenas? Rogers had last name on the lava blocks.
Let me see. You don't know, there's no other, there aren't any family around the Germany?
Not to my knowledge, because they bought the farm in about 1871 and so.
Sure. Well, some of the families that you know, somebody stays around and others they just go.
Yes.
Okie doke.